Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 6, 2015. Three Eritrean nationals were shot and killed by unknown gunmen in Western Equatorial State.
We don't know the reason why they have been killed. We are working hard to find out the culprit, and every time we let people know who killed them.
And good news from Juba today. Central Equatoria State has a new television and radio station.
Information is an instrument that will improve governance because it enables leaders in all the sectors to express their views that have influence on the lives of the people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials in Western Equatorial State say unknown gunmen killed three Eritrean businessmen in Maridi town last night. Authorities say they are looking for the killers. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Maridi County Commissioner Wilson Thomas Younger says the assailants attacked the businessmen at around 8:30 last night.
There was gunshot in the center of the town. Shortly after that, the patrolling team went to the scene. So they rang me and told me immediately. Three Eritreans who were trader here were shot down to death. This morning they were taken to mortuary and they will be taken to Juba, and then they will be flown to Eritrea.
Commissioner Younger says authorities don't know why the Eritreans were targeted.
We don't know the reason why they have been killed. We are working hard to find out the culprit, and every time we will let people know who killed them.
This latest violence comes on the heels of deadly clashes that erupted between cattle keepers and farmers. Last month, suspected cattle keepers killed more than a dozen people and destroyed property. The violence prompted thousands of residents to seek refuge either in the bush or in neighboring counties. According to the United Nations, more than 4,000 people displaced by violence in Maridi are living under trees in Yambio. The UN says it's providing support in the way of food and emergency supplies to the IDPs. Commissioner Younger says the security situation has improved over the past few days. Shops are open and some outdoor markets are also open for business. But he admits that last night's murder of the three foreign businessmen has caused panic among residents.
With the shooting of yesterday, even some people have gone back to the bushes. So I'm calling on them to come back to their houses. Their organization are coming to register them. Those who lost their properties will be compensated.
It remains to be seen whether residents will heed Commissioner Younger's call to come home. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Maridi, we move to Nimule. Authorities in Nimule are blaming rebels for launching an early morning attack in the town yesterday that injured one policeman. Nimule is the only town connected to Juba by a paved road and accounts for more than 80% of South Sudan's imports. Residents say they were frightened by the sound of several explosions and gunfire in the middle of the night. Philip Thonaleu has this report for VOA from Juba.
At about 1:30 a.m., on Sunday, several gunshots were heard in Rock City, an eastern suburb of Nimule town. A few minutes later, gunshots and huge explosions were heard from Nimule airstrip and the downtown area of Malakia. Those firings, separated by only about a dozen minutes, were followed by another shooting in a parking yard where customs officials inspect trucks importing consumer goods to South Sudan. In all, the shooting ended at about 3 a.m. local time. Emilio Iga, ship administrator of Pagere area, which includes Nimule, says one customs police officer was hurt and three cargo trucks were set on fire early on Sunday when gunmen, rebels loyal to the SPLM in opposition, attacked the town. Iga, who was not in Nimule at the time, says the rebels, under the command of Major General Martin Kenyi, are responsible for the attack. Resident Abraham Yuen says he was frightened by the incident.
I was worried about people. Of course, when guns are like that, shot like that, automatically it may hit somebody. Actually, I was expecting the government to take some measures to help the situation because when the guns shots are when they stopped, people were worried still maybe the same thing will happen anymore.
Ayuen says residents were considering fleeing the town but could not because the shooting was coming from several directions and they feared getting caught in the crossfire. James Gade Dak, a spokesman for rebel leader Riek Machar, says their forces destroyed military artillery. The SPLM in opposition account could not be independently verified by other sources. Dak says the rebels are determined to, quote, close the trade route between Uganda and South Sudan at the Nimule border unless Salva Kiir's government accept peace and sign an agreement with the rebel. Another resident of Nimule, who will only give his past name, Bosco, says the attack caused widespread panic in the town.
Today business is going on, but not really. Only that people have to work hard to make sure the security is stable. Otherwise, if it continues like that, then things may collapse.
Nimule is the main import point for South Sudan from Uganda, and revenue collected in custom duties and taxes paid by traders contribute significantly to government operations. Iga says all measures are being taken to provide adequate security to Nimule and surrounding villages to avoid any future attacks. Residents say several military trucks arrived in Nimule on Sunday. Until now, the town has remained relatively peaceful since the conflict began in late 2013. For BOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
The spokesman for South Sudan's army is casting doubt on a recent United Nations report accusing members of the South Sudanese army of committing atrocities. The report, which was based on interviews with 115 witnesses, accused some SPLA soldiers of raping and even burning women and girls alive in Unity State between April and June of this year. Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer told VOA's Peter Clotty the report is without merit and demanded an independent inquiry into the alleged atrocities.
Our reaction to this report is that such a report must be subjected to investigation. It has to be investigated whether these alleged atrocities are really true or not, because we have to establish beyond a reasonable doubt that it is the SPLA soldiers that has committed these atrocities. By establishing, first of all, the area of operation where the atrocities took place, so that we know which unit of the army that was operating in that area in a particular space of time. And if that is proved true, definitely the army will take measures against whoever might have committed such atrocities. We have corps, military justice, that punishes violation of rules of engagement and the rules of operation.
Colonel Ague, my question to you now is that, are you doubtful or reject the report of the UN, or when will the army itself begin investigating this content of this report about these atrocities that were committed?
We are doubting the truth of this report because it sounds it is politically motivated, and if it is a reality, it has to be followed by a transparent investigation that will include the United Nations mission in South Sudan, the SPLA, and other stakeholders to prove that really the army have committed such atrocities. We feel that the report came at the time when Riek Machar rejected agreement in Nairobi, and this to us is providing Riek Machar with tools of intransigence in which he is rejecting an agreement with the government and taking this as a moral ground that he has a case. So the coincidence between the timing of the report and the rejection of the rebels of peace agreement is really a concern.
Colonel Aguirre, are you therefore saying that perhaps the UN is supporting the rebels against the government based on this report that came out that you called suspicious coincidence?
The suspiciousness is that the report is based on people that were investigated and interviewed within the camp of the United Nations in Unity State, and more than 90% of those in the camp are supporters of Riek Machar and supporters of the rebellions. And therefore, they will never say anything good about the government or about the army, as far as they are part of the opposition. And this is why we are calling for a transparent investigation to include all the stakeholders on the ground.
That's Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer speaking with VOA's Peter Cloti yesterday. Colonel Aguer told reporters in Juba today that South Sudan Army recaptured Malakal from the rebels of the SPLM in opposition. There is no confirmation of Aguer's claims from independent sources in Malakal. Malakal town was captured by the rebels last month. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Central Equatoria State launches a public radio and TV station. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are feeling stressed, what is the best way for you to relax?
There are different ways on which you can relax your mind. One, you can always go to the fray with friends. You can as well go join a church, you know, church group. You can join a choir. You can read a novel. There are some people who like even, you know, dancing or something like that. Sometimes I sleep, sometimes I scream, I shout out.
The best way that I find to relax is just by going to sleep, so that at least I forget everything. When I wake up, I'm feeling a bit different, even though the problem may have not gone away, but it has somehow lessened. Then I start praying and trusting God.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan has its first independent public broadcaster. The Equatorial Broadcasting Corporation, or EBC, was officially launched today in Juba. The EBC is founded by a Central Equatorial state, but its reporters will provide independent television and radio coverage of events in the state. Governor Clement Kwani Kong'a says the EBC's main focus will be spreading messages of peace, unity and prosperity. Philip Thona Leu reports for VOA from Juba.
Juba resident Victor Lugala says he is excited about the new media company.
Equatoria hosts the capital of South Sudan, and we expect them to do better in terms of professionalism, in terms of presenting news and programs and entertainment, better than all the other media stations that we have had in the past.
The state government funds the EBC operations, but will not determine programming or interfere with news content. The seats of EBC were passed on in 2007, when Radio Juba was taken over by the semi-autonomous government of Southern Sudan. Governor Kong'a says financial constraints drag out the project to establish the independent broadcaster for longer than was intended. But he says today's launch made the wait worthwhile.
It dream comes true. With this, I would like to declare that this facility shall be the beacon of the restoration of hopes for the people of Central Equatoria. We shall conservatively use this facility for informing, educating, entertaining, coordinating, directing, consoling, mobilizing, and reconciling the people.
Kong'a says the new media outlet will broadcast information that unites people in Central Equatorial State and improves their lives.
This facility must contribute in standing up to rebels, corruption, hatred, laziness, crimes, alcoholism, useless leisure time, lies, and envy, which are now dominating the society.
Martin Elias Lomoro, the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, represented President Salva Kiir at today's launch. Lomoro commended the Central Equatorial Government for taking the lead in establishing the EBC. He says free media are one of the pillars of democracy.
Information is an instrument that will improve governance because it enables leaders in all the sectors, politicians, church leaders, civil society, everybody else, to express their views that have influence on the lives of the people. It also enables the people to know what is being done in their government on their behalf.
South Sudanese journalists, including those who work for state-owned stations, often complain of being harassed and forced to censor themselves. It is not clear whether the EBC will be free from similar intimidations. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
Waki Simon Wudu contributed to that report. Analysts say they believe the peace talks have achieved little in 18 months because the international community is at odds over how they want to see the conflict resolve. They say there has also been some pushback from some officials in South Sudan who do not want to see the talks expanded to include more moderators. For VOA News, Charlton Doki has this story from Juba.
After 18 months of peace talks led by East African bloc IGAD, there is still no workable peace agreement for South Sudan. Now some experts say the international community, led by the United States, should put together a peace deal and force the warring parties to sign it. But other analysts say forcing a deal on the warring sides would lead to unsustainable peace. Alfred Sebit Lokuji, an independent consultant specializing in governance and development issues, says the international community has a vital role to play in the peace process, just as it did in bringing about and enforcing the Comprehensive Peace Agreement that in 2005 ended more than two decades of war between Southern Sudan and Khartoum. But he says the big push for peace has to come from South Sudanese.
The whole Addis Ababa process is very much encouraged and also financed by the international community. The Arusha SPLM process, that's the international community. So the problem is not in that direction. You know, let's close the windows, close the doors, look for the problem inside the house.
Simon Monoja Lubang, a professor of social and economic studies at Juba University, says it's wrong to suggest that a solution that is forced on the warring sides would work. He says any solution that is imposed on the two sides will not restore long-lasting peace. He says it would even lead to more conflict.
To me, I think their support should be geared towards actually helping the South Sudanese to come up with their own solution, because at the end of it, we are going to be the one living with that solution and having to implement that solution.
Monoja says it's because the mediators have been taking the wrong approach that the peace talks have dragged on for so long and made little progress.
For one thing, IGAD were concentrating on the issue of power sharing. They are not discussing the root causes of the war. To us, it is a problem of governance. The outbreak of the crisis is because of the process of governance. Number two, it is a process of the structures in the country, whether they are a military structure or even the judiciary structure. These are all the underlying problems of South Sudan since independence, or let me say since the CPA.
Monoja says the international community should impose targeted sanctions on the two sides' leaders, not just military commanders in the field. The United States, European Union, United Nations and Canada have all imposed travel bans and asset freezes on half a dozen military commanders from both sides of the conflict, but fighting is still raging in parts of the country.
Unless this international community, the Western countries, can come up in imposing restrictions on some of this political leadership, who are actually the key to the success of the process, we will not move forward. And I'm sure if there are an imposed travel ban, they will begin to think very seriously now to bring and sign a peace deal.
But South Sudanese officials do not want to hear any mention of sanctions. In fact, when IGAD said the peace talks will be expanded to include nearly a dozen more mediators, including from the United States and its troika partners, Britain and Norway, the European Union and the United Nations, Information Minister Michael Makuei said government negotiators would not sit with them.
Because they are the very people who demanded that sanctions must be passed against the government of South Sudan. They have already decided to punish us. Are they neutral to come and mediate again? These people, whether you'd call it Troika or the UN, these are people who have lost credibility.
Lokuji says those who are against, including the broader international community in the peace talks, are shooting themselves in the foot. He says he believes the international community truly wants to restore peace in South Sudan and end the suffering of the people.
You don't call the United States a spoiler. You don't call Norway a spoiler. You don't call Britain or France a spoiler. I mean, these people wanted to be spoilers. They could easily send drones here and pick out the people they don't want. Are they doing that? They are not.
Lokuji warns, however, that Sudan could be a spoiler at the peace talks.
Sudan and the Sudanese people very upset that the South Sudanese became independent, broke away. So it's natural. They are going to do all that they can to upset our winning situation. You know, if we are winners, you know, they would like to be the spoilers. And then, of course, our independence with it has gone a lot of oil that they would like to make use of.
Monoja says that in the eyes of the armed opposition in South Sudan, there is another potential spoiler. That's Uganda, whose troops are fighting alongside the SPLA. In fact, Monoja says, almost all the countries in the region have geopolitical interests in South Sudan and could be trying to influence the course of the negotiations. But he says that's no reason to exclude them from the negotiations about their neighbor's future, which is closely tied to their own. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
In 4 days, South Sudan marks its fourth anniversary of independence. That should be cause for celebrations, but the 19-month-old conflict and the fact that the government has failed to provide basic necessities to its citizens is leading some policy experts to question whether the world's newest nation is a failed state. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayen Bior has more.
Stephen McDonald describes South Sudan as a nation destined for disaster. The public policy scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. says as the young country prepares to celebrate 4 years of independence on Thursday, many people are disappointed with the government's failure to provide running water, electricity, or even basic security for its citizens. He says 4 years ago, it was a completely different story.
Most people celebrated the independence of South Sudan at the time with great joy. I did not join in that because I foresaw serious dislocations and problems occurring because none of these issues had been dealt with.
McDonald says the country's inability to resolve the ongoing conflict or provide food and security to the most vulnerable citizens are the main reasons he sees South Sudan as a failed state. McDonald also questions why the government did not take advantage of the financial support provided by the international community to build its infrastructure and create jobs, or why the government did not build schools or bolster the feeling of nationalism over tribal heritage.
They're never coming to grips with any of those questions in terms of the border disputes, oil revenues, and et cetera, meant that it was destined for a disaster, in my mind.
Robert Rotberg with the Harvard Kennedy School's program on interstate conflicts says labeling South Sudan as a failed state could actually help the country.
Oh, it matters because policy options are few in South Sudan, but if policymakers all over the world, and particularly in Washington, know that South Sudan is designated as a failed state, there are procedures both in the security sector and in the development sector, which should come into place in the United States and around the world to help South Sudan.
Part of Rotberg's work is to identify failed states. He says the first element of a failed state is the presence of a civil war. He says he measures the level of violence and the ability of any given country to pull itself out of civil conflict to determine whether or not it's a failed state. Rotberg also measures the government's ability to maintain law and order.
And obviously, since it's lost control of Malakal this week, and because Unity State is basically out of its control and has been for months, South Sudan can't provide what's fundamental to everyone's, every citizen's livelihood, which is security. And in those areas that are insecure, it obviously can't supply education and health, and there's no rule of law.
McDonald says it is clear that the leaders of South Sudan have done more harm than good to the country, where more than 2 million people have been forced from their homes, 4.6 million face hunger, and thousands have been killed since the fighting began in December 2013. McDonald says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are more concerned about power than about protecting their people.
I think that they are the problem, not the solution. That neither one of them want anything except to be president. They're seeking power, and they're not going to abide by any kind of solution that doesn't leave them in power. So a peace process that is focused on reconciliation between the two of them is doomed for failure.
Agustino Tingmayai is the director of research at the Juba-based Sud Institute. Mayai says his country will not achieve peace unless the citizens of South Sudan are included in the process.
The current peace discussions that are taking place both in Arusha and Addis Ababa need to engage the regular population to have a stake in it. This has not been realized in the recent in the past negotiations, and that those discussions are centered around politicians to sort of settle their issues and go back to their position by not involving the population to be part of this and to be able to say this is what we need when peace comes. These are the services that we have been lacking in the previous government. This is basically what we need for health. This is what we need for education, and not politicians to do what is best for the population. The discussions are not designed around that, and I think that needs to take place.
Mayai says the first step in solving a problem is admitting that one exists. He says he's disappointed that his country appears to be heading toward failed state status, but he says South Sudan can still recover.
We know what the consequences are, but I think realizing that there's a problem does actually give us an opportunity to design the ways in which we could address it. Being a failed state doesn't mean that we live with this for the rest of our lives. So I think realizing that, especially we South Sudanese making sense of that and saying we have a problem and we need to fix it, is a good point of departure.
That report by South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayan Bior brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Ayan Tamohaba by Sultan Clinton.
Ayan Tamohaba. Bini ada jemil, nama nasa tu pada waka waka besado. Ini amang lah, malaik. Sebab kita sedar tu tak ada
Excuse me, lady, what's your name, baby? Bisa coli sinta kimono, bebe abu takimono. Mote manangai.
We have been listening to Sultan Clinton with the song Ayan Tamohaba. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening, And we hope you'll join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Hallelujah.